This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back again with another fun-filled edition of the M Squared TechCast, coming to you live over the interwebs from the PodcastDetroit.com studios in Royal Oak. We got a great show for you today.
Yeah, we pretty full show here. We're going to experiment with a new format. We have Keith Brophy calling in from the Michigan Small Business, and I always want to say technology,
but not anymore.
Technology was dropped, right?
Yeah.
And Michigan Small Business Development Center, and he's going to actually do a segment where he's going to be the interviewer, and he has a guest on the line, John, if I'm pronouncing this right, Schlachter, president of the Mackinac Technology Company, and then that's going to be the first segment.
And then second up is Stephen Rapundolo, our old pal from MishBio. That's the state's biotech industry organization, and they have their big annual conference, the MishBio Expo, coming up in Kalamazoo in late September.
27th and 28th, in fact. And then in studio, our drum roll, please. Gosh, yeah, where's that little thing I had? Tom Kelly. Well, hey. Normally he's on the show, but he was just the number two man. Now he's number one.
Good afternoon. Who does number two work for? Yes. Number one. That's me.
He's the new executive director of Automation Alley.
Man, what did you eat? Sorry. Sit here and do Austin Power Lines all day.
Yes, okay. And he has a vision thing he's going to talk about. George Bush didn't have a vision thing, but Tom Kelly does.
And so, strategic, too.
Very strategic, yes. And then... Go ahead.
Okay. And our final guest today, and the way things are going so far, maybe forever. No, just kidding. But Gary Baker is a true internet pioneer in Michigan. He was CEO of Michigan's first private internet service provider way back in the early 90s.
That was a while ago.
Yeah. And we won't talk about that.
You were 20 years old.
We were both children.
Very, very young.
Yes.
And he is now co-host of the Internet Advisor, a fine high-tech radio program that you can hear most Saturdays on WJR 760.
Yep. And on
the 50,000-watt blowtorch.
And always on Podcast Detroit.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Okay. But first, Keith. Are you there?
I am, and thanks to Matt and Mike. I appreciate the chance to join you today.
Okay.
And as well as our distinguished guests, a quick shout-out to Tom Kelly on the new role at Automation Alley.
Yes, congratulations, of course.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
I am glad to open with a quick look at a innovative Michigan business with so much promise for the future. And John Schlachter has joined me to talk about that business, Mackinac Technology Company. So, John, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And John, your business is one that really catches the interest because it's both a innovator. I know you're still relatively early stage with promise ahead of you. And it's also, I think, a business that with a product we can all identify with at some level. Is I first started to become aware of what you're seeking to do with very innovative thinking and advanced technology. It reminded me of my old college days in Ann Arbor, where I was in an apartment with big windows, and I would tape on every winter. We'd tape on a covering on the inside of the windows to try to keep the cold air out and to keep our heating bill down. But I think what you're doing is taking that several generations beyond that old approach. Could you describe to us what the core product of Mackinac Technology is?
Yeah, the core technology is a unique thin film coating. It's actually a diamond-like material that we put on plastic and glass substrates. And we've been developing this for several years, working in close partnership with the Fraunhofer USA Coating and Diamond Technology Laboratory on the campus of Michigan State University. We apply that coating to window glass windshields for automotive applications, and we apply it to plastic substrates for our retrofit window system.
And by some estimates, the cost of energy loss is over $40 billion a year from windows that do not do an effective job of reducing heat loss. So it sounds like you're on the cusp of big opportunity. Was it that opportunity that inspired you to go in this direction with the business, or you know, what was behind your stepping forward with this direction?
No, it's actually the business opportunity found us. We were working on the basic science, actually looking at other applications, and everybody kept saying what we need is a product that can go in front of windows that we can still see through, but that gives the window the same insulation value as a wall. And that's a pretty tall order, and I didn't think we'd ever be able to achieve it. But we, in fact, have. We've made some prototypes. We've tested them for a year in an actual window and measured their performance every day. And we can give the window the same insulation value as a wall. And you can still see through the window, and it's a color neutral clear. It looks really good. You don't even notice that it's there when it's up in front of the window.
As you've moved your approach forward, you've had a number of grants and awards. I know a STTR award along the way in 2009, and more recently a U.S. Department of Energy Advanced Research Project Award of a $2.5 million grant. Can you describe which step in your business progression has been the most pivotal in moving it forward?
Well, actually, the most pivotal was a very small grant that we got through a program in Michigan called the Business Accelerator Fund. And that was, so we were assisted with that application by the Small Business Development Center, our counselors there. And that was a small award of $50,000, but that allowed us to do the very first basic technical proof of concept that then led to a second grant from the DTE Energy, the utility in Detroit. And they gave us $125,000 that enabled us to scale up to do a little bit larger proof of concept. And it's the data from that proof of concept that then made us eligible for funding through the ARPA-E contract to get the $2.5 million that we're now working under. And that's already led to follow-on funding from potential customers like the U.S. Department of Defense and so on. So it all started with a very small investment by the state of Michigan, and it's reaping some pretty big results right now.
And could you describe the technology behind your solution in maybe a layman's level of detail? You know, how does the technology work?
Sure. Two-thirds of the energy that goes through a window goes through in the form of electromagnetic energy. And that, by that I mean the heat. When you put your hand in front of a window on a cold day, the back of your hand feels cold. That's because all of the radiant energy is going out through the window. And so the idea is based on concepts used in spacecraft insulation, where you have many layers of aluminized mylar, and they're spaced apart with spacers, and that's how they keep satellites and stuff in outer space from overheating or getting too cold. So what we've done is develop a coating that reflects heat energy like aluminum, but is transparent, so you can still see through it, and it also is durable when exposed to air, so it's not like the normal coatings that are inside double-pane windows, where if the air gets at it, it'll tarnish because it's made with silver. Our material has no silver, so it can be exposed to the air, and it's much less expensive to produce than existing, so we can use a lot more of the material. So basically, if we stop the electromagnetic energy from going through that window, then the R value of that window is dependent upon the stagnant air in between the panes, and so we're able to stack multiple panes in a system and get R10, R13 against a single pane window, which that single pane window normally would have just an R value of 1. So we can improve the performance of your window about 10 times more than that stuff that you used to stick up with the blow dryer.
Can I leap in here? This is Mike Brennan. Do you have, is this priced out yet? Is this commercially available, or is it still in development?
It's still in development. We hope to have product available in the market in about 2 years. Right now, we can make very small prototypes, one at a time. We're right now getting into the scale-up phase where we'll be scaling up to do much larger substrates and much larger windows and be able to produce them for demonstration installations over the next year with a goal of being in production in about 18 months to 2 years.
Oh, by the way, Keith, we've got about 3 minutes left, so go ahead, continue on.
Great. Well, one other thing I wanted to ask you about, John, is you're teaming with one of our educational institutions in the state, and that's Kelvin College. I noticed in the description of your business evolution, you've had a teaming with Kelvin. Can you describe what that's consisted of? How have they helped you out?
Oh, yeah, they've been incredibly helpful. I'm a graduate of Kelvin and have several friends who are on faculty at Kelvin in the engineering and physics department. And the first role that they've performed is a sanity check. I'm not a scientist by training. I'm an entrepreneur who comes up with crazy ideas, and I would bring my ideas to them, and they would explain to me when I was violating the laws of physics. And they would encourage me and help advance my thoughts when I was on the right track. And right now, they're actually a performer on the ARPA-E project. A group of students and faculty at Kelvin have developed comprehensive testing equipment, and they're actually doing all of the testing and demonstrations of the prototypes we make for the ARPA-E project. So They're a big part of the work that we're doing now, and it's been a really good relationship for us.
Great. And one final question for you. Oftentimes, entrepreneurs with great ideas, especially around technology, are fearful of sharing moving their IP forward. For fear their IP will be plundered or picked up. How have you protected your IP as you've traveled this journey? And has your intellectual property been a very big concern, or you just decide to kind of move forward in spite of that?
Well, we have patents. We have patent applications pending, but realistically, sometimes that concern is a little bit overblown, and people spend way too much time afraid of moving forward out of fear that's not really based in reality. The fact of the matter is it's extremely difficult to do what we're doing, and someone is not likely to be able to replicate the work that we've done on the technical side of things. So we're protected simply by the nature of how complex it is. We also keep things secret that we don't want to share until we're ready to file a patent application on it. But often you're working with people who aren't going to plunder your idea anyway. They're just trying to be helpful. And if you don't share enough information with them to allow them to be helpful, you're not availing yourself of all the information and help that's available. So,
all right, John,
there's a fine line.
Okay, John, this is Matt Rausch. I just want to thank you both for being with us. We've run out of time for this segment. If people want more information, what's the website real quick? Hello?
Did we lose him?
Yeah, hello. It's
John,
your
website, John?
Yeah, the website.
Hey.
We don't have the website up yet because people keep trying to order the product, so we took it back down.
Well, I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this. If you can get a window up to R10 or better, the world will find you. Trust me. Okay. Thanks very much, Keith Brophy from the Michigan Small Business Development Center, and John Slagter, president of Mackinac Technology Company of Grand Rapids. We'll be right back with the next segment of the M Squared TechCast.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you're listening to M Squared TechCast.
A proud member of the PodcastDetroit.com network, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Indeed. Yeah. Okay. Indeed. From the lovely studios of Podcast Detroit in Royal Oak. Right now we've got a guest that we've talked to, I've talked to a bunch of times over the years. Mike, I'm sure you have too. He is Steve Rapundolo. He is president of MishBio, which is the state's biotechnology industry association. They're all about medical devices and pharmaceutical research and development.
Life sciences.
Life sciences. Also a lot of sort of the bioeconomy, as it's known. It's a fascinating and broad field, and their big annual confab is coming up here in a few weeks in Kalamazoo. Steve, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about the history of MishBio, if you could, please.
Well, thanks a lot for the invitation to speak with you today. So MishBio, as you indicated, is the statewide life bioscience trade association. It's been around since 1993, and its mission is to drive the growth of the industry here in the state. And it's a pretty sizable industry. You indicated a few of the sectors that make up the industry. There's five sectors, in fact: the ag, industrial biotech, the pharmaceuticals, the medical devices, the research, and the diagnostic testing. And then lastly, the distribution and logistics of all those kinds of products. So all told, we've got over 44,000 people that are directly employed and almost a quarter million that are touched by the industry one way or another around the state. So it adds a lot to the state's bottom line economically, and we just want to see it grow even more. And then you indicated that we've got our expo and conference coming up, as you said, in Kalamazoo on September 28th. We're going to do a little bit different format. In the past, it's been a day and a half. This year, we're going to begin with a half-day workshop in the regulatory and compliance space. And then the actual conference is going to be just a day of the 28th. This year's theme is connecting technology to health and well-being, kind of trying to leverage off all the evolution or the revolution going on in digital health and so forth.
Now, you haven't announced the speakers yet. When are you going to be doing that?
We're going to be doing that shortly. We're still trying to round some of those up, and we certainly have announced our keynotes. We have Dr. Jeff Elton from Accenture, who's going to come and speak to us about how the whole changing healthcare delivery landscape is causing the pharma and the med device companies to have to rethink how they do business. And in fact, he's written a book alongside one of his colleagues called Healthcare Disrupted. And he's going to bring some of those learnings tell our attendees how the world's changing and what that means for innovator companies, whether they be big or small. And then we have a second sort of keynote or special speaker, and that's Alec McConey, and he's over at Click Health in Toronto. Click Health is the largest independent digital health marketing company in the world, and they are doing some really cool things there. In addition to doing marketing, they also have some skunkwork labs, and they're helping commercialize companies and so forth. Really fascinating, but they keep a close tab of what's going on in the digital health space, and he's going to come talk to us about the latest trends in that whole area.
Speaking of which, why don't you define that? I've heard that term, but I have to tell you, I'm not real sure what it is.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those funny terms that's sort of all-encompassing, but at the same time, perhaps has some certain boundaries. I don't know that I fully... you know, and knowledgeable about what the proper definition is or isn't. In fact, I was communicating with Alec just last week, and he seemed to be talking about something that I didn't think was digital health, and I had to, you know, basically ask him, well, how do you define that? But I think, you know, what we're referring to in digital health is largely what everybody's hearing about these days in terms of mobile health, whether that's wearables or digital apps, whatever the sort of technology that's connecting products, whether they be devices or drugs or diagnostics to the patient, either directly or indirectly in terms of healthcare delivery. We're seeing a lot of remote medicine going on. A lot of these devices and apps and so forth are the linkages between the patient and the healthcare providers.
I'm wearing a Fitbit, too. I'm wearing a Fitbit, too. Would that qualify for one of those devices?
It certainly would. It certainly would. If it's taking, all your vitals and transmitting that information back to the provider or a health plan, for that matter. I know my Fitbit is synced. I sync it weekly with my healthcare provider, who has a requirement to receive certain benefits, I guess, of my health plan, require that I have to provide them data on my health and well-being, and the Fitbit's an easy way to do that if you have that.
Okay.
That's sounds a little intrusive to me, but whatever. Close enough. How many people do you expect at the expo?
Well, we're hoping for 300, 400, 500. You've been to the show before.
Sure.
We try to move around the state. We took a year off last year because we were focused on the growth summit, if you will. That was our we released our statewide industry sort of strategic plan. And so that was, we hosted that in lieu of a conference, but this year we're back. It's the 11th one that we're hosting, and we couldn't be happier to be back in Kalamazoo. It's always a city that welcomes us, not the least of which because they have such a sizable bioscience hub themselves.
Mm-hmm. Long history in the industry, that's for sure, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. It's the only community in the entire country of any statistical size, large, small, or medium, that has a concentration in all five of the sectors that I articulated earlier.
Wow.
So it has quite the honor, nationally.
And it's got Bell's Brewery there, too. So, I mean, how could you go wrong, right?
When all said and done, beer is bio, so indeed.
That's right. It is a living product, as they say. Yeah, right.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just curious. We've got 3-4 minutes left here. I was just wondering if you could tell me, which of those sectors do you think has the strongest potential for growth in Michigan? Which ones are kind of hot right now?
Well, it's a little bit of a toss-up, quite honestly. The bio report just came out a couple of months ago, and they do every other year they do a state-by-state analysis, which reports out on some fairly simple metrics, employment numbers within each of the sectors, the number of establishments, and so forth. And Michigan saw some very, very nice growth across the board, predominantly in the medical device and the clinical testing, diagnostics testing space. But pharma has rebounded as well very nicely, almost to pre, sort of Pharmacia days back 12 years ago. All three sectors are very healthy. I think on average across the board, we saw a 6% increase, but it was as high as 11% for the pharma sector. So, it's very good. I know Pfizer is poised to start a $750 million expansion at their manufacturing facility in Portage. So I think that's at least one indicator of how strong the marketplace is.
I know sort of biofuel or bioindustry hat, and I saw you had a statement yesterday about that University of Michigan study that came out about biofuels too, right? Could you touch on that for a
Indeed.
Minute?
Indeed. We're beginning to get our arms around that sector. We're probably going to be holding a forum later in October to bring that sector together from around the state. The date's already set. We've got a keynote, and we'll be making an announcement on that in the coming weeks. So, you know, we've always been certainly engaged on the policy front in the bio-based sector, and that was some piece of research that was released last week, and we took note of it, and I think we, you know, came to the conclusion that the science was fundamentally flawed. That group has been debunked before in the scientific community, and you know, here they are once again putting out that you know, bad information. Really,
it was paid for by the American Petroleum Institute, so I flagged that when I released it. That was in my lead. Take it for what it's worth, right? So,
absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so is there a fee associated with attending this conference you have coming up on the 28th in Kalamazoo?
There is indeed. We have member and non-member rates. You know, we have rates for faculty and students. So we welcome, you know, anybody and everybody to participate. I think it'll be a very informative day, and people will come away having learned a lot more about how the world of technology is just swirling with our ability to connect, you know, our bodies and medicine more and more.
Okay. Thanks very much, Stephen Rapondolo, president of Mish Bio. That's at mishbio.org, correct? Am I right about that?
That is correct.
All right. And that's where you can also learn more about the Mish Bio Expo coming up September 27th and 28th in Kalamazoo. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back in a few seconds with our next segment.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
And we have in studio, we always love in studio guests because the audio quality is superb.
Check, check, check.
Is his mic on? Okay. Yeah. Tom Kelly, the new executive director at Automation Alley, just announced last week. I was at Ken's retirement party the night before and got a swell picture of the two of you together.
Yeah, it was a great night for Ken. I was so happy that everybody showed up. Everybody and their brother and sister showed up for Ken.
They got his age wrong, though.
78, I think.
I can't believe he's that old.
Though. Yeah,
can
it's hard to believe. Yeah. He's got a picture hanging in his closet that's much older.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and the old joke is, you know, he's the guy that all of us, especially me as his right-hand person for a while, you know, 4 a.m., email start, bam, 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 before you even show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you sleeping, Ken? Hopefully he will sleep a little bit more now that he's semi-retired, but
I hope so.
He'll be around anyway. So I did a story last week. I did it. I've known about this for about a month, but yeah. I was sworn to secrecy. So I met with Tom about 2 weeks ago and did an interview and then sat on that for a week.
That's right.
So Tom has this vision thing where he's going to make Automation Alley the expert in the fourth industrial revolution. Why don't you explain that?
You got
it. Industry 4.0.
Industry 4.0. Okay. And so Industry 4.0, they call it the fourth industrial revolution because really the first was steam. You were able to get a lot of productivity. The second was Henry Ford and the assembly line and electricity. They kind of came together at once, really transformed manufacturing. And the third was robots and computers, you know, the lame attempt at automation back in the 80s.
Yeah, and didn't work out too good.
It didn't work out too good, did it? Ask GM. But you get to the fourth industrial revolution, and it's the digital meeting the physical. And this is where it gets pretty interesting because, as you know, being technologists yourself, you know, if you think about what's happening in industry, you have 3D printing, you have autonomous robots, you have big data, you have cybersecurity, you have the cloud, you have even more technologies than that. If you think about it, any one of those is disruptive and can put you out of business. They're all coming at once, every one of them. They all are interrelated. And so we have to figure out as Michigan, how are we going to react to that? You know, I'll give you one example. Who here knows the largest consumer of robots in the world? Who do you think that is?
I'm guessing GM.
China. With the low-cost labor.
Of course.
China gets it. They understand what's happening, that all these technologies are going to come together to make this physical digital world come together. GE's Predix system. You saw a ton of ads on the Olympics. Why is an industrial company advertising a software platform? It's the internet, the industrial internet of things. It's coming very, very, very quickly. And Michigan has a great play to own mobility. But I think we also need to have a great play to own industry. It really will be the job creator that we're hoping it can be. It really can manifest itself around that.
No,
that's what we want.
Well,
to do.
We still have the whatever they call them these days, the big three here.
Absolutely.
Although I'm not sure about Chrysler.
Well, the
Fiat.
Michigan three anyway.
Michigan three.
Yeah, there
yes.
you go.
The Detroit three.
Yeah.
So I was just gang of four, you know, or whatever. No, that's different. I'm sorry. So.
Yeah.
But
well, this the future you're seeing for manufacturing is. The kind of thing that we've been pushing for years, both at my former employer and my current employer, you know, the Engineering Society of Detroit and Lawrence Tech,
right.
That manufacturing is no longer what they used to call the 3Ds, you know, dirty, no. dangerous, and dull.
Yeah,
It was really,
when I was a kid. I mean, I worked in the factories, and it was
a hell of a motivator to continue in college.
Yes, indeed it was.
Although when, Tom, you were describing that digital meets physical,
yeah.
you don't say that around autonomous vehicles, so.
Right.
Yeah, that's a bad thing to happen.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
Still
and it will
the,
still.
Still working.
Right. They
the
can see
out.
Them, just not hit them.
Yeah, right.
So you're basically talking about a future for manufacturing, creating significant numbers of jobs, but a different kind of job, right? Talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. So if you think about if I gave you job descriptions, data management, cybersecurity, software, you would think Silicon Valley, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the top three jobs predicted by Boston Consulting Group for a manufacturer in 2025.
Hmm.
Does that blow your mind? Because guess what? Everything that's manufactured is going to have sensors all over it. You got to program it. You got to make sure it's safe in cyber world. You got to make sure you can get the data out and put it into your algorithms that you will create and own on how you process all this data coming from the world. It really is going to be crazy how much change we're going to go through in the next 10, 20 years.
How are we going to keep up? Not only consumers, how are small businesses going to keep up? Because that's really your clientele.
That's your clientele.
You guys are working together, actually. I can tell.
That's right. Boy, I got to get you,
Well, that's Gary Baker, by the way. We didn't introduce that other voice. Gary Baker from Internet Advisor.
Yeah. And I've been on the Internet Advisor
with
you guys.
Right,
we've had a lot of fun. But so great question. So we think that the large companies, the ones that are here, the OEMs, the tier ones, they'll get it and they'll be fine. And you know why? Because they have capital and they got brains. They're either going to get it right, or if they get it wrong, they go buy the guy who got it right. Right? You can make it through. Small and medium manufacturers and the technology companies that relate to that, they don't have that luxury. So Automation Alley, we're going to try and put together committees that specialize in each of these technologies. And we're going to have the bigs come together and tell us, where are you going over the next 3 years? Because for a big, that's a tactical plan. For a little, that's visionary, right?
That's
so,
right.
So the, you know, 3 years, I don't even know where I'm going next month, right?
Right.
But for a big.
Yeah, welcome to the world of entrepreneurship.
That's right. I don't even know what I'm having for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
And you're asking me to look out 3 years. So the big say, that's tactical. We know where we're going. So we've talked to a lot of these people, and they're agreeable to say, yeah, we'll share with you where we're going, because it's not proprietary. We're not. There's nothing about it that isn't anything but tactical. We can take that and then say with the littles, come around the table with us and let's put plans together that can help move you and the industry toward that.
You know what we've seen over the years, many, many times over the years, that the large companies, we've got large companies here. Mm-hmm. They spend lots mm-hmm. of money.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always spend it here on the small
That's
companies.
Right.
They
That's
spend
right.
them somewhere else. How do we get them to spend it here with their small companies here in Michigan?
So great question. So the secret is you got to own the pilot plants. And the pilot plants can grow and grow and grow. So, you know, it's going to sound crazy, but Michigan shouldn't necessarily feel too badly if China and Mexico are getting the million unit plants. What we got to protect is make sure that the pilot plants, the plants where they go in and put all the new technology on and fiddle around with, those are the plants we have to own. And if we own those, people that don't make cars will start to gravitate here and say, well, you know how to do that. We got to make stuff. Really interesting point. You know, if you look out 20 years, all the stuff I'm reading says manufacturing is going to actually go hyper-local. So Michigan
that's
won't be –
That's what 3D printing is all about.
That's right.
For sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
So think if Michigan owns the plants that figure it out and then it goes off to 1,000 other plants around the world, the ones that are shaking in their boots are Mexico and China.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because all they've got to sell is cheap labor, or mostly what they have to sell is cheap labor.
That's right.
Well, you know, the last
That's
time
right.
we really
saw – Well, don't forget
fun.
About India either, too.
Yeah, right, yeah. right.
Well, they got good brains over there. Don't kid yourself, yeah. right? They're going to
well,
be good.
Both, and China too.
And, yeah. and Mexico's yeah. up and coming. Look
That's
what they're
right.
doing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the last big the Saginaw steering gear factory of the
Next
future.
Next year now.
Right? And it's just that one more cog in that wheel progression, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
I was
absolutely.
Just I was just blown away the first time I toured that place, the next year plant in Saginaw.
Square feet.
I know, I know.
Oh my God.
And a thousand, you know, master's degree engineers doing nothing but thinking about electric power steering of all things.
We put a lot of the automation into when Roger Smith put together the Factory of the Future.
Yeah.
We owned a company called Open Networks Engineering. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the founders there, and we put a lot of that technology in. But that was all factory floor. Now we're seeing it actually happen in the vehicles themselves, which is a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. So if you think about it, you got this autonomous vehicle technology. You got vehicle-to-vehicle technology. You got vehicle-to-infrastructure technology. Now you got this Industry 4.0 technology. Mm-hmm. And it's all got to come up to speed at once. It's a heavy, heavy lift, and it's going to take us a long time to get there, both on the autonomous vehicle side and on the Industry 4.0 side. But and by the way, it's a perfect complement. What Automation Alley, the path we want to go down, fits perfectly with mobility, right? But it's different from mobility and has to be done.
So Toyota is spending $1 billion in Ann Arbor to improve that facility there, and I think that might be one of those pilot plants you were talking
you
about,
betcha.
Right?
Yes, and that's wonderful to hear that they're investing in Michigan because the R&D is here, the talent is here. Technology is here. To see them put that kind of money into Michigan is wonderful. We need to see about 14 more of those.
We need some help from Automation Alley, and that's to work with government, state government.
Well, that's what we do.
I know you do. But I was just reading in the paper, you know, Australia is where they're actually looking at autonomous vehicles, actually having a fleet of true autonomous vehicles.
Singapore's
no
already doing it.
Right? Singapore's doing it. Mm-hmm. And I just saw that Domino's is delivering pizza by drone.
Absolutely.
In New Zealand.
Yep.
In New Zealand.
One store in New Zealand. That's the test bed. Why isn't it here in Michigan?
We have to
change the laws so we can do that.
It's not in Michigan.
We got to talk to Enrique about the drone law.
Well, you know, Automation Alley was just awarded a grant from the Department of Defense and through Macomb County to do autonomous systems, which is drones.
Mm-hmm.
So the military is very interested in that, and it will spill out. So we are trying to do all of these things. But you know why? Because we have to stay super focused on what's happening on the industry side as well as what's happening on the vehicle side. People view autonomous vehicles as the be-all, end-all. You got to think that we have to win that battle,
but it's not the panacea for job creation because of the way those technologies work. Industry 4.0 could also play a major role in creating jobs, which is what we all want.
That's right.
All right, so we got about two. I got the two fingers better than the one. Sometimes I get the one, you know. So
which one you get, though?
Yeah,
right? That's right.
If folks want to get involved with Automation Alley, if they want to really get involved with this Industry 4.0 thing, that your vision thing,
absolutely.
How do they do that? Do they reach out to you, or what?
They can reach out to me. I would be delighted to talk with every one of them. In fact, I sat down with two very large technology players. And in the past, they wouldn't necessarily have been at the foundation table for Automation Alley. Both of them want to come on board because when you lay out marrying the technology with the little companies, all of a sudden it becomes a great win for everybody. So come to me directly. Either I'll help you or I'll get someone who can. So I want to talk to everybody.
Then you're going to have to give your contact information.
KellyT@automationalley.com and 248-457-3302.
You might want to do that again.
Yeah, that was a little fast. They're reaching for their pencil right now.
You're going to keep me honest, aren't you? Yeah. I tried to sneak out of here.
Yeah,
it's KellyT, KellyT at automationalley.com, 248-457-3302. Call me up. I would love to talk to you.
That's great.
Yes, and then, of course, the main website, as he indicated, is automationalley.com.
That's right.
Well, I always want to say org. I don't know why.
But we could be an org. We are a nonprofit, but yeah. we chose .com. It's hipper.
Indeed it is. Yes. So we have a thousand.
Nearly 1,000 members, which we're going to push through this year.
And
we're going to push through.
Do you have any idea of those 1,000 companies, how many employees they employ? You have any idea?
We have asked that question. We are going to find that answer because I think it's brilliant to get to that answer. We don't know today. Okay. We need to find that out.
And one of the things that I think you do that's really worthwhile is that whole technology industry report that you do, too. That really sort of makes this area shine.
Yes. And you know what? Spoken like a real media guy, too. You got that report. That's great.
And
that's
you're going to see us really challenge the rest of the country around what's happening in Industry 4.0 and are we really prepared? We don't know what the answer is. That's a teaser, but it's really going to be great.
All right. Well, we're going to continue this discussion in just a minute. Gary Baker of Internet Advisor is the next guest. Tom, if you could stick around, feel free. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast on the podcastdetroit.com network.
Well, that's all, folks.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with segment four today of today's M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network. And we are here with Gary Baker, the internet advisor guy, or one of them, with Foster Brown at WJR.
Yep. And Cal Carson and Ed Riddell are our tech experts. So they're always in studio, or most often.
All right. And when does that program air so that people may find it?
WJR 760 AM in Detroit, actually in Detroit and five other states. And up into Canada is our broadcast
signal. We love our Canadian cousins.
And, yeah, that's right. Saturday from 4 to 6. Okay. And we also podcast here in Podcast Detroit on our own
website. And we promote it. I promote it from MI Tech News. Oh, yeah. They're one of my partners that we promote.
We have Mike on every week.
Yes.
For a big segment.
How
long has that show been on the air now, anyway?
18 and a half years.
Wow. Okay.
It's hard to believe. Nobody from WJR management must be listening, because if they were listening, we would not be still on the air. I'm sure of that. So.
Well, no, it's an hour of news and views and fun and the second hour is, call-in, where people call in with
right.
So it's an hour of news and an hour of sort of DIY computer help, which I have found valuable in the past, I can tell
syndicated
you.
Syndicated in Grand Rapids, Muskegon, Kalamazoo, and Lansing.
That's right. Yep. Michigan Talk Network.
Yep.
So you know what's so funny to me, and I mentioned it briefly while we were off the air, but we're on the air. You guys have a clock here. And I'm thinking, wow, it's so great to be on a podcast, because when the conversation ends, we just stop because it's a podcast. You know, who cares? Mm-hmm. And we used to do that till we were syndicated. So the first, I don't remember when we started syndicating now, probably eight, nine years ago.
Been a while.
But the first, say, 10 years, we had to hit the out at the top of the hour because there was news.
Yeah.
And otherwise, we didn't care. When we finished a segment, we'd stop and they'd run commercials and then we'd start up again. And
if you want a couple minutes long,
who cares?
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
And we just made sure that we did a good job with our guests and got the information out to our listening audience. And the neat thing about a podcast is you can do that.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to follow the clock. But Jessica keeps us on track.
Reasonable. Yeah, I'm your clock.
Well, we have some segments that could easily run long, but sometimes, boy, 14 minutes is all we can squeeze out.
Yeah, so I would stop it right there.
Yeah. It's like this is dying, let's end it now. You know,
and Foster is so good, because Foster's, 40 years plus in radio.
A real pro. Pro's pro. Absolutely.
And it's so funny, because I can hear him stretching something, right? After all these years, you kind of get used to what he says and how he would get out. And most of the time, we're running against the clock, where we have to kind of cut people off and cut off the conversation. But there are times when we ask him a question, goes, yes, no, yep. That would,
he's not okay, into it,
you know?
Then.
Huh? And you kind of go, okay. And Foster's so good. He keeps us, he just asks the right questions. And he'll just stretch it and stretch it and stretch it till the end of the segment. You guys could, you kind of go, that's it. No more real substantive conversation. Let's cut this off. You could do that.
No, Gary, we'd never do that with you.
No. So tell me, how did you first get into the internet business? How did all that start?
So we were trying to figure out how to help businesses. And the best way for small business—
I mean, you came up as a CPA, right? That was your original background? No. I thought you were an accountant.
No, okay.
He was a professional water skier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in my dreams.
Noted Street Fighter. How did Sonny Elliott used to describe people? Yeah, right.
Actually, I saw Joe O'Neill on the street last night. We were both out for a walk. He was with his wife, and we were talking about, I got started in real estate. Joe O'Neill's owns O'Neill Construction in Ann Arbor, and he was one of the people that got involved in Carytown. And I had bought a small building, rented to students, right near Carytown in Ann Arbor. And it was because of Joe and his partners that the price went up on that house, and I was able to buy two more, and then a couple more, and then a couple more.
Gary was a real estate mogul.
So there were bumps. Mogul means that's a big bump. Yeah, there was.
People forget about that other meaning of mogul, don't they?
Yeah, that's about the only way you could describe me in that industry. But it was interesting, but I got involved in small business. I was the chairman of the Small Business Association of Michigan, which I know both of you guys know and love.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to help small business, and I had been The very first technology company I got started was in 1980, if you can believe that.
Whoa, mm-hmm. Did they have technology in 1980?
Yeah, barely.
It was horse-drawn and steam-powered,
yeah,
I think.
We had one of the first 50 IBM microcomputers.
Ooh.
In the state of Michigan. We were a developer group, so we got preference, and that was back in 80. So I was always interested in technology, and – you know, this internet thing seemed interesting. The web had just barely started. Nobody really even had a graphical browser. And we said, we've got to.
Until 94. Or three. Andreessen.
In the very end of 93, December 93, yeah. Came out. Mosaic came out in 0.9 beta. I had been trying to figure out how to make a graphical browser. And we couldn't figure it out. Talked to Vince Cerf, who I happened to get to know because he had come to Ann Arbor.
The real inventor of the internet, not Al Gore.
That's right.
Back in 1973, he and Bob Kahn really did develop that protocol, TCP/IP, which was the base protocol for the internet. But he said, go over and talk to this guy, Mark Andreessen, over at the University of Illinois Urbana. He's got this big federal grant. And we looked at that and we said, okay, we're not going to develop a graphical browser because, you know, this guy's got a lot of money from the federal government and he's going to do it. So what else can we do? And we decided to start Online Tech, Online Technologies Corporation. And we started with a product called BizServe, which was our connectivity product. But my interest was always in developing websites. And back then, it was all blue type, gray background. If you had a graphic, you know, like some people had graphics, and we had a graphic one, right, on the website. And that's how we got started. And
You didn't want graphics because the bandwidth was so bad.
Yeah, I still remember the first website that Crane's Detroit Business put up. I was involved in that. And the first thing you saw was a giant picture of Keith Crane.
Of course.
Personally welcoming you to the website of, yeah.
Her. And you know, they
called
put it up
personality.
On. And Cranes put it up like so many of the first ones, they put it up on our service.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we helped them figure that out. I remember many times they're kind of going, but we do print. You know, why do we want to do this on computers?
Why do we want
computers?
To give our news away?
Why would we want to do that? Yeah.
Well, that's how you hooked up with Foster.
So Foster happened to be – I could probably say this. He'll probably hear it, actually.
I'll make sure.
So anyway, he kept calling our tech support group, and they couldn't figure out the problem that he was having, and they said – you know, they called me in from the other room and they said, can you talk to this guy? He keeps calling and we don't know what to do with him.
He has a nice voice, but we don't know what he wants.
We don't know what to do with him, right? And we have all these other calls being backed up. So I said, okay, sure, I'll take it. And so I started talking to him and I couldn't figure it out. And he was having trouble getting on. Mm. And we said – and then I finally kind of had an idea. I said, you know what? Your trouble is that you have squirrels eating the insulation off of your telephone line. And he went, right. Yeah, that's first time some tech support guy has ever mentioned that as a problem, right? I said, Foster, do me a favor. Look out the window, see if there's any squirrels on your line. And he said, nope, there's not. I said, okay, well, keep looking because that's what's going on. You got signal leakage from the pole to your house somewhere. Mm. Right? He was saying our telephones, which were not as,
bandwidth intensive,
You know, and if you cut out a little bit here and there, who knew? Who cared?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It was analog voice. But for a modem, which needed, to have stateful and connectivity, you couldn't, it wouldn't work. He called me back about an hour later. He goes, damn squirrels on my line. So he called the phone company that came out, replaced it, and he had great connectivity. Mm. But then that's how we developed a relationship. And he said, anybody that could come up with that kind of a solution, you got to come and be on my show. And he was doing the morning show on WJR at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was on a few times in the fall of 97. And he said, you know what? Why don't we just carve out the last half hour? And make it the Internet Advisor Show. And so the station went, right, yeah, right. We want to do that. So I went in and I did some tests over the holiday. They figured nobody's going to listen during the holidays between Christmas and New Year's that year anyway. So why not put them on? And so I did a few tests and hosted a few shows. And they came back and said, maybe we could do this, a half hour of Foster's show if he's willing. And we so that's how the Internet Advisor show got started. A friend of mine created the bump music, Steve Didos.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started in February of 98.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how we got started.
Okay.
But anyway, so...
It all started with squirrels eating telephone lines.
Yeah.
Weasels
can you believe
my flesh.
Who would have thunk? You know, Foster does edit this, so he will hear this.
Yeah,
so,
I wonder if he edits all that out.
Yeah, no, he'll keep that in, you know. So.
Well, if he does edit it out, yeah, you live listeners out there are lucky. You got to hear the real story.
The real story.
Of the birth of this. So what's going on with you now? What are you working on these days?
So I
I'm between jobs,
right? I just finished up at Beaumont Health. Mm-hmm. I was the interim chief information security officer out there, among a couple other projects that Subra Shapata, who is the CIO, mm-hmm. invited me to come over and help him on that. And so I've got a couple other things that I'm looking at, but there is a great little project that I'm working on. I'm so excited about it. It's called GPS for Leaders, and it's a mobile app. Rick Stallings, who was the managing partner for Arthur Andersen Business Consulting here in Michigan, started this. It got a number of us involved. Fritz Seifried, who many people might know from his playing days. He played for Bo Schembechler. At the U of M, and then he was an assistant coach, and then he was assistant AD, and now he's a leadership coach. Ron Potter's involved. Jim Richardson, who is a women's swim coach, retired now, but longtime women's swim coach, was also involved. George Azrak is involved, and then Rick Stunmark. And so we got a couple other people that we think we might be able to entice as well, but great little mobile app. We'll be putting it out hopefully in the next 3 to 4 months. It'll be out on the site so you can start to play with it. But it's going to be to identify and train leaders.
Hmm.
Something I'm really passionate about.
Okay. And that's an organizational development tool type thing? Or?
Yeah. You can use it individually for better interaction with people. So,
do you have a website yet?
GPSforleaders.com.
Of course.
Four is the number four.
Oh, okay.
GPS for leaders.
Okay.
And if you're looking for a great chief information security officer, I promise Gary I'd throw out a plug there for you.
Yeah, him, so. Or I can do data I've been a CIO twice and I've
worked for Borders
consulting.
At one time.
Yeah, I worked for Borders. We didn't say Borders.
No.
We were doing transformation saving companies, didn't say Borders.
Oh, okay. Got it. And then see what else. I know there was another one in there I missed.
Gale.
Yeah.
We did say Gale. Yeah, it consolidated into its parent company and SME, Flagstar.
Flagstar. That's what I was trying to remember. Yeah, I know it was a bank.
Yeah, we got it out of trouble with the regulators.
That's
just important. Needed to do a lot of there's a lot of things that we needed to do. So.
Okay, we got about a minute left. We should probably go back over who we had on the show, not to mention Gary here.
Absolutely. We had Keith Brophy from the Michigan Small Business Development Center for the first of what will hopefully be a lengthy engagement where he'll have a monthly segment to interview whoever he wants to interview. Today it was John Slogter, president of the Mackinac Technology Company. It's a Grand Rapids company developing really cool coatings for windows.
And then Steve Rapundolo talking about the Mish Bio Expo at the end of September 28th, well, actually 27th to 28th, in Kalamazoo. You can find more at mishbio.org.
And Tom Kelly, the new CEO, I'm sorry, well, executive director,
yeah,
is he CEO?
He's executive director.
Executive director of a nonprofit is a CEO.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, he is executive director of Automation Alley, taking over for the legendary
Ken Rogers.
Ken Rogers.
Who has a picture in his closet that's very, very old, because if you look at Ken, you'd never guess his age.
That's right. Absolutely. He acts way younger than his years.
And the same with Gary Baker, a very young-looking man. He has a very old picture in his closet, but he's a great technology guy, and we're glad to have him on the show. And, of course, I'm always on his show every Saturday, so that's a lot of fun.
All right, yes. And you can find Gary every weekend at Internet Advisor on WJR and
760
AM. am. And sometimes when very large men in green uniforms are playing a sport.
Unfortunately, they're not.
They're not on the air, but you can always hear them online. And they are on this very same network as us, PodcastDetroit.com.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. No very large green men in this room, that's for sure. Yes. this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast.
We'll be off next week. We'll see you September 12th.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.